From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Some research indicates men may be almost as likely as women to be victims of sexual assault, yet we rarely think of them in that light. We hear from psychologist Dr. Andrew Smiler, a leading expert on the masculine self and a board member of an advocacy organization for male victims of sexual assault. Then we turn to Kenneth Rogers Jr., a Baltimore school teacher who has written a book about his experience as a victim. It took him 2 decades to face the abuse he suffered, in part, he says, because of his gender.
Society teaches us that males commit rape. Males are the ones that do the raping. So, in my mind, it was because of me that all of this happened.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. Today we're going to talk about a topic that our society visits so rarely, it's nearly taboo, male victims of rape. Recent research indicates that men may be almost as likely as women to be victims of sexual assault, yet we rarely think of men as victims of sexual assault. Later in the show, we'll hear from a Baltimore City school teacher who's written a book about his own experience as a rape victim. But first, psychologist Dr. Andrew Smiler joins us by phone. He's a leading expert on the masculine self, and he sits on the board of an advocacy organization for male victims of sex crimes called Male Survivor. A word of caution, some of our discussion may not be appropriate for young children. Dr. Smiler, welcome to On the Record.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that 1.6 million men will be raped in their lifetime. What is your sense of how common these crimes are?
1.6 million men is really a staggering number. I mean, that's a number that is larger than some small cities. It's a huge number, and it's something that we really don't talk about almost ever in our society.
That's the number the CDC uses for rape. I've seen that you cite a larger number overall for male victims of sexual violence.
Yeah, if we expand the definition so that we're not just looking at forcible rape, but if we're looking at other forms of assault, potentially including men being forced to penetrate someone against their will, then other CDC estimates and federal estimates put the number closer to 1 in 6 men at some point in their lifetime.
Is underreporting a particular problem among male victims?
Yeah, it's a huge problem from the perspective of both kind of law enforcement and policy, and certainly for men getting help. We know that all victims, regardless of their gender, tend to feel some shame at having had this happen to them. The research and clinical experience suggests that that shame is, in some ways, much deeper and much more prominent for men, in part because men, starting from childhood, are raised to believe that they should be able to defend themselves, that, you know, they should be able to fight off any attacker. We're also taught that guys should never be penetrated, that they should always be the active partner in a sexual encounter. Those two issues play out in a lot of ways for guys and make it very difficult for them to come forward and admit that they've been victimized.
How large a proportion of these cases are young boys?
We know from the literature in general that the majority of sexual assaults take place in younger childhood, typically before 13, rates go down, whether we're talking about girls or boys, once we're talking about teenagers. And then there's an additional drop once we're talking about adults, again, regardless of gender, male or female. In some ways, that is, I suppose, practical from the side of the abuser. The younger the person is, the easier they are to overwhelm or to talk into doing something that they would not otherwise choose to do.
Are perpetrators more commonly women or men?
When we look at male victims, we see large numbers of both male and female perpetrators. Female perpetrators tend to prefer, on average, older clients. We certainly see a fair number of news stories about adult teachers raping their adolescent male clients. And at the same time, we also know that there are a fair number of men who are sexually assaulting and raping young boys as well as teenagers. And interestingly, most of those male perpetrators do not identify themselves as homosexual. They will tell you that they are straight, that they prefer women.
Well, before we go further, I think we need to address a question that some listeners may have on their minds. How is it possible for a woman to rape a man, given that the man presumably would need to have an erection?
We know that boys, younger boys, if they're capable of getting an erection, and certainly teenage boys, and even adult men, are not necessarily capable of controlling their physiological response. And so they can become aroused and erect and forced to penetrate against their will. Women and advocates for female victims also dealt with this question because there are reported cases of women who, during the act of rape, are somewhat aroused and get lubricated. And in a consensual situation, that would be taken as, you know, the woman enjoying the pleasure.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with psychologist Dr. Andrew Smiler. We're talking about male sexual victimization. Conversation may not be appropriate for children. Is there a particular shame associated with being a male victim of rape?
Absolutely. Some of our internal data from the men who use our bulletin boards, a male survivor, indicate that the average male survivor waits 20 years before disclosing his sexual assault or rape. That means for most victims, they're going through their entire adolescence and a substantial part of their 20s without ever having said anything. And again, we go back to our expectations of men as being able to defend themselves, this idea that men always want sex and would never turn sex down. All of those things play into that shame and make it more difficult for male victims to come forward. We also know that things have gotten better, but when men come forward by going to hotlines or going to crisis centers, that there are some cases where men get turned away because the staff don't believe that men can be victims.
So how do you address that?
In part, we address it through shows like this. We also do it through education. We know that therapy training programs and programs that train crisis counselors who work at rape centers have become better about talking about male victims and including male victims in their training. But again, this is an issue that rarely gets the light of day. We also appreciate it when things that come out of Hollywood give some light to this issue. There was a recent season-long series on American Crime. I believe that was 2 years ago. And even going back to Veronica Mars, that was part of the underlying mystery through, I think it was seasons 1 and 2. So it does show up in common culture periodically. And while it is not a pleasant subject, we do hope it starts to show up a little bit more.
Actually, I would think that what comes out of popular culture more often is to play the situation as humorous, the idea of a man being a victim of rape.
There is a lot of humor that gets attached to this, and often that kind of humor diminishes the experience of male victims. Lots of jokes about what happens in the locker room or what happens to guys that go to prison. So it is very much a mixed bag in mainstream media, but we are seeing some serious attention to this and not just the mocking or the diminishment.
Let me pick up on that. Popular culture has spread some stereotypes about the prevalence of rape in prison and in the military. Do those hold true? Those stereotypes? Is there more male victimization in those circumstances?
We know that in closed systems, and it can be any kind of closed system, rates of sexual assault and rape increase. We do know that this is not an unusual occurrence in all male prisons. We know from Department of Defense stats that actually the majority of victims of sexual assault in the military are male. At the same time, we also hear about sexual violence against boys occurring at boarding schools in various ways. We certainly had the Catholic Church scandal several years ago. So we know this is happening and it's getting out, and people are taking it more seriously than they used to, but there's still work to be done on the awareness side both to help us get accurate reporting and to help male victims feel more comfortable in coming forward and seeking treatment.
Do men have more difficulty getting justice through the legal system than female victims of rape?
We do know that cases of sexual assault against male victims rarely go to court. Almost exclusively, the only ones that go to court are when a young child is sexually assaulted, and occasionally when it's a teenage boy with a female teacher. But prosecutors hold a lot of discretion there. There's potential for plea bargaining, and those cases don't always go to court. But other cases are quite rare, cases that have any potential to be construed as consensual almost never seem to go to court.
What can we do as a society to make it easier for men to seek help after experiencing something like this?
There are a couple things that we can do. One is that when a young boy, a teenage boy, an adult man comes to you as an individual and says, "This happened to me," then believe him. This is not the kind of thing people make up to get sympathy. Take him seriously, ask him what he needs in that moment of telling you. Does he just need to tell you and get some support? Does he need help, perhaps finding a mental health professional or perhaps going forward to law enforcement? But be supportive in whatever ways you can. Don't tell him that, no, he didn't get raped, he got lucky, because that is not his experience. His experience is one of violation, not of pleasure. As a broader culture, we need to take it seriously. We don't really tolerate rape jokes where there are female victims anymore, but we do quite readily tolerate that against males. We can stop that. We can tell people that that's not funny, that we're not going to watch their shows or attend their performances anymore, because this really is a serious issue and not one where people should be mocked for being victims.
You mentioned a few minutes ago some male victims being greeted with skepticism at rape crisis centers. Is there kind of a competition of people thinking if they credit males as victims, they're somehow detracting from the problem of sexual assault for women?
That's a great question, and it has a complicated answer. Sort of. We know that dollars for these kinds of resources are quite scarce. And we know that for various reasons, rape crisis centers tend to be single-sexed. So there is concern by folks who operate these centers about loss of dollars, about having to, you know, run two centers on essentially a single budget that doesn't get expanded. We also know that there are folks who, from an ideological perspective, believe that women are only victims and men are only perpetrators. They may bring those beliefs to work and have a hard time accepting that a male could be a victim, particularly a straight male. So we get into those kinds of dynamics that may reflect an individual who happens to work at a center. They may reflect the beliefs of the center director. They may reflect budgetary realities, given that there's really not sufficient money for victims, regardless of gender.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Psychologist Dr. Andrew Smiler is an expert on the masculine self. He sits on the board of Male Survivor, an advocacy organization for male victims of sex crimes. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Quick break now, and when we're back, we'll hear from a Baltimore City school teacher who has written a book about his own experience as a victim of sexual assault. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. If you're just joining us, we're talking today about something society rarely acknowledges is a reality, male victims of rape. Before the break, we heard from a psychologist who sits on the board of an advocacy organization. Now we turn to someone with a more personal story. Kenneth Rogers Jr. is a Baltimore City public school teacher and the author of several works of fiction. But his latest book is all too real. It's called Raped Black Male, a memoir. Kenneth Rogers Jr. is with me in the studio. Welcome to On the Record.
Glad to be here, Sheila.
And listeners, there's material here that we need to discuss, frankly, so this conversation may not be appropriate for children. Kenneth Rogers, you write about being 8 years old when, as you put it, the grooming began. Tell us what happened after that.
So my sister was the one that was my sexual abuser. So she would watch me as my parents went to work, and while they were gone, she would play pornographic movies she would find from my father. And after a month or two of watching pornographic movies, she said, let's do what they do in the movie. And that's where she proceeded to place me on top of her and proceed to make me have sex. So this happened over the course of 2 years. And over that 2 years, I began to get used to it and expect it until abruptly it just came to an end. So after that, she told me not allowed to talk about it or just think that it didn't happen.
How did it leave you feeling, that experience?
With a lot of questions. How much trouble can I be in? Feeling very upset for the fact that all of a sudden this had come to an end, because I was expecting this and then all of a sudden this had ended without any explanation, and I was left feeling vulnerable and empty and hollow and not sure why any of it had happened at all. And I couldn't ask any questions because I was supposed to be silent about it.
Your memoir circles back several times to the idea that you felt responsible because you were the male in the situation.
Yes, ma'am.
How'd you cope with that?
I'm still coping with that. I still go to therapy. I still meditate. And that has been the biggest hurdle in therapy, coming to the terms that I did nothing wrong. Because society teaches us and has taught me that males commit rape. Males are the ones that do the raping. So in my mind, I did this. It was because of me that all of this happened. I should have either stopped it or I should have had some way of keeping this from happening. Since I was the male, it's naturally my fault. It's difficult coming to terms with.
Do you think the fact that you were a boy empowered the perpetrator, that she thought no one would believe you?
I'm not sure if she thought it through that much. It wasn't the fact that I was a boy that they wouldn't believe me. It was the fact that I was 8 years old and I was manipulated into not saying anything. If I told, then that meant that I had done something wrong too.
When did you tell?
I did not tell until a few years ago. So I've been silent for over 20 years now. The only reason I started talking in the first place was because my daughter was born. She was born and my world went crazy, because children do that. You can't have an exact schedule on where things need to be done. And when you're a survivor, you need routine. It makes your life have more order. So when Mirrors was born, all that got thrown out the window. I started to have breakdowns, like severe mental breakdowns, where at one point I just couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't figure out why. Went to the hospital multiple times, thoughts of suicide, and then finally got admitted into seeing a therapist and telling her, after her getting it out of me, that I was sexually abused by my sister. And she said, maybe that's why you're going through this. But I still didn't see any connection at all. It took a long time for me to, at least 6 months for me to really see the connection.
That's Kenneth Rogers Jr. here on the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his memoir, Raped Black Male, in which he writes about being sexually abused as a boy and how he has coped with the aftermath. How has being a rape victim affected your sense of yourself as a man?
Quite a bit. I'm secure in my masculinity. I know who I am. But being a survivor has added a whole new dimension to my identity. It's made me question some things. If I wasn't raped when I was 8 years old, would I be in this position that I am right now? Would I be married to my wife, who is white? I don't know. Would I be a teacher? Would I be more spontaneous to actually have pursued a career in acting after college? Just these questions and what ifs.
And has it affected your view of yourself as a black man?
I've always had questions about my blackness because I've always been known by my family, a lot of my friends, as being the nerd. I read comic books. I always have a book of something in my hand. I watch Cosmos and Daredevil. Growing up, you had the idea that black males had to be ghetto or hood, especially in the 90s. And I did not want to do that. I did theater growing up. That was not what a black male was supposed to be. I was supposed to be rapping and playing basketball.
And do you think any of that was complicated by what you went through in terms of sexual abuse?
It had some kind of effect because growing up, I stayed to myself. When that happened, I got absorbed into these books. Just, I had to escape. Maya Angelou said the same thing after she was sexually abused as a child. For 2 years, she said nothing, no words at all, and she just read. She read everything she could get her hands on, so when she decided to speak, she had a lot to say. I guess the sexual abuse would have a huge effect because if that didn't happen, I wouldn't have gone in on myself and been silent as much, and I wouldn't have decided to express myself on the page when I couldn't really express myself actually in real life.
You talked about reacting to the chaos of parenting an infant.
Yeah.
With essentially a mental breakdown or something close to it. Beyond that, how has that experience affected you as a father?
I love being a father. My two little girls, Miris and Amare, they are my world. The fact that they might see me having a breakdown, that really sort of makes me upset.
Is that another form of feeling responsible as a male?
Definitely. Growing up, I was taught males provide for the family. And males are stoic. They are strong. They don't talk about their feelings. That's part of the reason why not a lot of males that have been sexually abused ever step forward, because they are taught at a young age that boys grow into men that don't share their emotions, don't share their feelings, they don't go to therapy, they work through their feelings, or they self-medicate through drugs and alcohol.
Which you have not done.
No, it just goes against my individual code. That's sort of what I've been working on right now. So I'm writing another book, a guide for male survivors.
You are also a teacher. You teach seventh grade?
Yes.
In a charter school here in Baltimore, public charter school?
Yes.
So now you've published this memoir. A lot of your students presumably know that aspect of your background. Is that good?
It is good. Some people don't view it that way, but I know for a fact that some of my students have been sexually abused. For them to know that someone that looks like them has gone through this and has survived, it gives them hope. Even if they don't say anything, it does. They know that someone that had that happen to them at such a young age, and I tell them, oh, I can't meet after school today. I have therapy I have to go to. They see, oh, Mr. Rogers goes to therapy too. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just what people do in order to get better.
This must have been hard to write.
Well, it took over 20 years. I still have my old journals. So I've taken excerpts from some of my old journals and put them in this book. I sort of get a good hodgepodge of my life in this memoir. Everything is there, nonfiction, fiction, because both of them make up my life.
Why did you write the book? What is it you wanted to accomplish?
There was no other question of what I had to do, because there's thousands of other me's out there that have no idea that they are not alone. When I go to therapy, the book that I read is for female survivors. There's hardly anything for male survivors. And male survivors need to know that they're not by themselves. There are other people that have gone through this and they can get through it too. And it's also just to help me, just to make sure that I don't stay silent anymore. I've been silent for over 20-some years, and I'm pretty sick and tired of it.
I appreciate you walking us through it. Thank you.
No problem.
Kenneth Rogers Jr. is a member of the Speakers Bureau for Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, called RAIN, and he's written Raped Black Male, a Memoir. Kenneth Rogers will read from the book at the Waverly branch of the Enoch Pratt Free Library on Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. We have details on the record page at wypr.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.